Hey girl, hey!
Hey girl, hey!
That's Annie.
And that's Ellie.
And we are
Those Spooky Bitches!
Still the best.
I know, it's so much fun to do.
We are joined by one additional spooky bitch today, and his name is Ricky, and he's a Yorkie, and he may be making some sounds. That's, so,
yeah.
Just FYI, he really wants to be pet, and he will be asking for those pets frequently, I feel.
I pulled up to Annie's house, and literally there was like this giant dog bark, and I was like, Ricky, you went through puberty! And then he was just like, nope, just kidding.
Nope, wasn't he? It wasn't me. It wasn't me, Mom.
So did you have a good week?
It was a great week, actually. Good. I don't really have a lot. Here's what I'm excited about, and also loathe at the same time.
Okay.
One, very excited that everything is in bloom. Also, loathe pollen. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yay, Persephone. Boo, Persephone.
Right. Right. So, but the weather is really what made me have the best week. I can't really, you know, there's a little bit of rain here and there, but just, like, being able to look outside at the trees, having leaves on them, something about that just makes me so happy.
I just love how, too, like, we are, like, so alike and so opposite, because I'm, like, I crave fall, and I went to the store before I got here, and everybody's, like, giving me these dirty, crazy looks, because it's, like, 90 degrees, and I'm in a hoodie and pajamas. Just, like, nope, I want to go back to the fall. Let's go.
Well, I get down for some fall, don't get me wrong, but I don't want winter.
Yeah, no.
If I could just vote out a season, it's going to be winter.
Or at least small enough where we can enjoy some snowy, icy prettiness, but then it's gone.
We just live in Tennessee, and so that's...
It's like tornadoes, 24 hours, and then snow, which does happen.
In the same day.
Yes, yeah.
There is no in between. But yeah, how was your week? Did I ask that already?
I don't even know, but you know, ADHD, so... I think it was doing pretty good. It's just like working on watching a lot of different things. So like, there was one case, I don't know if you saw this or if I even sent it to you, in Duluth, where this guy was posting on social media that he was going to commit suicide and then he was going to kill his family members.
Oh, trigger warning, suicide.
Oh, yes. So sorry. I'm the worst about these things.
We'll get better one day.
Yes. But yeah, he posted this on like a social media website and then there was no response to him at all. So he posted it again and that was like his kind of like final letter. And then he did. He attacked his family members, including the children and the family dog.
First of all, I hate people that kill children.
Yes.
I also hate people that kill animals.
Yes.
And I hate all people that kill people, but, like, if we're really going to choose people to be mad at, I'm going to choose the ones that are killing children and animals. Yes. But I did see that, but I did not read the details on it.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting. It's still pretty fresh, I think.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to follow that and see where it goes. So
I remember that one. And there's been a few other crazy ones too. Oh, that one girl that like decapitated her lover.
Yeah, I think
one thing too. I wanted to kind of like, we can totally do it at some point. But those are just like the random little things I've kind of noticed off and on. Been watching a few of the documentaries, really, really enjoying them. The John Wayne Gacy one just came out. So I haven't finished it, but I'm like two episodes in. It's very interesting as always. I like when you can hear the taped.
Yeah,
because
I love
you really
that.
Get better feel for this person,
I
their tone,
that.
Inflection, everything, or the fact that they just don't care about what they did.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, those have been fascinating.
I
as
really
well.
Like to hear the 911 calls that people make as well.
Yeah, I haven't actually. I'm sure we could. There's probably like an app for that at this point or something
where you
can listen
them.
To that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I know a lot of. We probably sound silly, but usually I just look at YouTube videos to find somebody else who's found the footage, or even like Dateline or some of the news outlets will post it on YouTube as just
yes.
a video.
And that's where actually mine came from. I had one person today set aside to do the story on, and I was on YouTube looking things up, and then the other person popped up, and I was like, okay, well, we're going to do this.
We're going to switch this around a bit.
Just a bit. So far, though, is like mentioning people. I wanted to shout out to Easy Creations on Instagram, who made my shirt that I was talking about the other week. They also made my tumblers that I posted on our Instagram. It's pretty freaking awesome. And then Allegra, hi girl. I just wanted to say thank you for being awesome, reaching out, following the podcast.
I thought you were talking about the allergy medicine at first.
Oh, yes.
I'm so sorry, Allegra. I'm sure you've heard that a million times. I'm so sorry. But I thought that's what you were. I was like, oh, yeah, shout out Allegra and Flonase.
Yeah, because Annie has allergies.
But I also not. Allegra the human being.
Yes, also Allegra. Because she's got a really cool Etsy shop as well, which I will link in the Instagram as well. And then the other cool shout out is to my homegirl, Ashley. You know who you are. And we were just talking the other day, kind of catching up. And I will not say about what our mutual place is that we see each other from. But and I'm not trying to make that. This sounds so dark. It sounds like.
Yeah. What are y'all doing?
I normally see her.
Yeah.
She's in the medical profession, not like any other profession. But it was kind of cool because she instantly wanted to join our little, you know, one of us. And I didn't even say anything to her much. I just told her, hey, it's true crime, it's folklore, it's supernatural. And she's like, hey, I've got some Bell Witch stories. And I'm like, girl, that was our first episode. Like, the coincidence of that is too uncanny. Yeah. So I'm still encouraging you to send me a email about all those little stories there.
Also, not to interrupt you, but while we're talking about it, because, you know, I'm going to squirrel in a minute. One of my friends, Lacey, sent me a message that the Bell Witch Festival is coming back this year.
Yes, my friend Amber from where I went to high school, she tagged me in a thing the other day, and she said that the festival was coming back this year, too.
So I got so excited. I'm like, you guys are looking out for us.
Yes.
Keeping us in the loop.
And then in May, I'm totally going to send a day, like, up there. Like, I'm going to drive up there and do the cafeteria, the museums, the cave, everything.
That would be so fun. So, yeah. Do they allow babies?
I'm sure they do. Yeah, I think that there's some weird cap. Like they have to have at least X amount of people to do the tours. I think.
Oh yeah.
So I'm like, I said a baby. I mean, it's like three people.
She counts.
2.5
right?
people. So, yeah. You know, works for me.
Love that.
So yeah, I think that's it. Like as far as catching up on things.
Yeah.
Or unless I'm just spacing about something, which is genuinely possible.
I feel like that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, we could be wrong, but we can always do it, add it in next
when
it'll time.
Just randomly pop yeah. in our heads while we're giving ourselves, oh, by the way.
Right. Probably in the middle of our.
Sorry, guys, thing. But not sorry, because this is just us.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
You go first.
Okay.
You know,
so,
I love when you go first.
Today, we are doing female killers. That's what we decided
dun,
to do.
Dun, dun, dun. Oh, yeah. So we're going to try to have a theme for each podcast. But of course, like, obviously, there's a million female killers, so we can do female killers a bunch of times. But for today, it's female killers. Also, before you start, let's do trigger warnings.
Yep, absolutely. So this, I will just say that my female child killer, she's very young, strangulation, abuse, let's see here. She was a very, very wicked person in general.
Trigger warning for wicked people.
Yes. Exposure to just kind of like bad living conditions. They do end up saying that this is one of those things of nurture versus nature kind of things happening. But
ooh,
it is murder.
That.
It is strangulation. It is poisoning.
Okay.
Things like that.
All the
things.
Anything,
yeah, I can't think of anything else like directly that would probably...
Okay.
Set someone off, but if it does, I apologize, guys. I really do.
All right. Well, you heard the girl.
All right. So, like I said, I was surfing YouTube looking for a totally different killer, and this popped up, and it's from a BBC special.
Of course. BBC has good stuff.
Yes, they do. And it was from a million years ago, like this special, but it still was, like, perfect.
I love it. I'm so, yeah. So excited.
Okay. So, her name is Mary Bell, and so basically... This was in 1968, Scotswood, Newcastle. Is it yours
no,
the same
no,
place?
No, but my...
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. I was about to be like, holy crap. No, my victim was born in 1969.
Oh, okay. We keep doing... Guys, we don't plan this either. Like, last week, we had European, same timelines and everything. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. My goodness. Okay. Sorry. so, basically, Mary Bell lived in the kind of slums area of Scotswood, Newcastle. It was very, very well known because of the sex work that was there, pubs, fights, drunken disorderlies all the time. But it, even with all this stuff going on, small children were constantly, like, roaming the streets.
What?
And I know.
Just
chilling? Just wait.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It gets worse. It always gets worse.
It always gets worse.
So, like, literally, to show you how bad it was to live here, and this is a double standard thing. They couldn't even hang out their own laundry outside because somebody would steal it.
Somebody finna steal their drawers.
Yes.
Their off pantaloons. Their clothesline. Gosh. A pantaloon thief.
Pantaloon thief. But this is the other crazy thing, is they would sleep with their doors wide open.
Okay.
Like, how does this make any sense? I don't understand. Which, even now, I still don't understand how people have ever done that. Like, even the other day, my dad's like, do you want me to lock the back door while I just run down to the barn real quick? I'm like, yeah.
Absolutely.
And he's like, well, it's not like anyone's going to just be, like, ready to spring on the back porch.
But they might. You don't know. I'm like, Dad. You do not know.
We run a murder podcast.
Right.
Anything will happen.
You don't want to lock your door, that's fine. That's going to be the first thing they say on investigation discovery after they do your case. Well, she didn't lock the back door, folks.
Just invited the killer in. So, yeah, what they were trying to do, though, at the time, I don't know that gentrification really is the right word, but they were just kind of tearing everything down in the slums. Just everything's falling apart. There was just wreckage all over the place. And people say, you know, that all the children were pretty much raised as a village. So wherever it was that they were during the day or throughout the day, they would, you know, people would keep an eye on them, which is a lie. They were so poor that all of the children only got 2 presents a year. 1 present on their birthday, 1 present on Christmas. So it was just very destitute. More often than not, Mary Bell's parents were actually away all the time. So she was seriously neglected as a child, like pretty much by herself. She lived in the roughest part of the slums. So it's like if you want to get, you know, even worse, you know, it's a horrible place for a child to be all the time by themselves. Her mom literally tried to sell her, like, adopt her out for money.
Bless.
I know. And she was a sex worker. So she was trying to expose herself to all these other people that wanted her for money.
Yeah.
So also, like, sex trafficking, you know, I'm not okay with any of this.
Right.
And I don't even know if you would specifically say sex trafficking, but you are, like, trying to...
Wait, she was trying to pimp out her daughter?
I mean, yeah, she was trying to adopt her for money for stuff. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was there. Whew. Yeah. Her dad was one of these, like, really rough and tumble kind of guys. They said that he always just had this very menacing, unapproachable look to him, so nobody messed with him ever. Her pictures are, they're disturbing. Like, not intentionally, but she has, like, what I would call, like, the Ted Bundy face.
Okay.
Or whatever, where she's one of these people that's very charming.
Yeah.
Startling blue eyes, everything. But that face just screams crazy. I hate to say it, but it kind of screams crazy.
Okay, like, we've got blue eyes and a crazy face.
Yes. And I will post those on Instagram later as well, like pictures of her. She had, like, people said piercing blue eyes. And people said that when she looked at you, it just, like, she was just transfixed on you, and you just felt like something bad was going to happen around this child. She would be fine 1 minute and then suddenly aggressive. She would be shaking, and then she would just start to throttle other kids, just straight up trying to strangle other kids on the playground. So Mary's teachers were terrified of her because they said that she was domineering and sadistic. One day, she put out a cigarette on another student's cheek.
How old is this girl?
11.
11 years old. Yeah. And first of all, who gave you a cigarette? Second of all, she put it out on a friend's cheek?
Yeah. She didn't have friends. This child did not have friends. She does get one.
You know
she
what
gets
I mean.
One later, but even then, friend is debatable.
She puts it out on a classmate's cheek.
Yes.
That's a bold move.
And no one exposed her for it or chastised her for it.
Like, nobody cared.
Nope.
They're like,
they were so scared of her.
There's Mary Bell.
Yeah, no, she's just doing her thing.
Putting a cigarette on little Johnny's face.
Yeah.
Ate it for you.
And honestly, I can't say anything about cigarettes because, like, I started smoking when I was, like, 14. So.
Yes.
I mean, I don't anymore. It's gross, so I don't do it. But anyways. living situation, they thought it was really kind of a normal situation. But the problem is that it was very violent. And so, naturally, violence will beget violence.
Right.
So, on Saturday, May 11th, 1968, Mary and her new friend, Norma, picked up a boy at age 3, telling him that they were going to go get some sweets.
This is going to make me cry.
I'm sorry. Okay. Don't stop.
No, keep going. But
it's like me with your thing last time.
I know.
I'm sorry. Okay, so they're like, hey. Let's go get some sweets. So, later, they found this child stumbling around and bleeding down the street. The police were called, and nothing was done.
Okay. Bloody 3-year-old roaming the streets of the slums.
Yeah.
And they're like, meh.
He's like, whatevs. It happens. Okay. You probably fell and busted your face. Like, yeah. Ye old.
Yeah.
Throwing it back to last week.
Yeah, right. You probably tripped over a fence.
Probably tripped over a fence and bloodied your nose.
Bloodied your nose. And somebody used tissues on them.
It's exactly it. So, on May 12th, a woman went to the police about Mary Bell strangling her daughter in the sand pit at school. Nothing was done. Pauline was the lady that survived. And she said that up until the special, that she was still too terrified to divulge any information that would be pertinent to the event or the upcoming case.
Jeez.
So, yeah, this child was terrifying. And I mean, like I said, you look at that picture, and it's like she does transfix you, and it's from a million years ago. May 25th, Martin Brown, age 4, was playing outside with his friends, and his mother, June, said that, you know, when she's describing Martin, she said that he looked like the perfect angel, blonde hair, blue eyes, but he was always into something. He was always trying to create mischief. One day, he wanted a pool. So upstairs in there, I guess it was like an apartment they were living in, he pulled out a drawer and then filled it up with water in their flat. And it started leaking, of course, down through the bottom. And she said, I mean, she was just laughing about it. Like, you know, this is perfectly normal. Yeah, you know, it's cool if you want to flood the entire flat. No big
deal. I mean, that's totally a boy thing to do. If you're a boy mom, you understand. Like, yeah. You never know what they're going to do next.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that's all children. But yes, especially when this, they're really sweet angelic ones. They like, give you that grin and it's like, what's behind those eyes right now?
Yeah, like, what have you done?
Exactly. Oh, you're being quiet. Something is wrong. So, yeah, children were always playing in the derelict buildings, and it was called, like, Rat Alley was, like, the real bad part of town. And I'm just, like, in capitalized notes, I put, he was 4, playing in an abandoned, unsafe rubble. How is that normal? Like, how is this normal life for you guys? So, 4 years old, playing in the rubble, no one even noticed him missing until 5 o'clock that night.
Wow.
And that is when Miss June received a call that Martin was missing. So she moved, whenever they were out in the streets, there was just this huge crowd in front of this house. And she moved into the crowd, and a man had Martin in his arms. He was cold and gray, is the way she discussed it. And June said that she, like, wrapped her coat around him. She asked if he was okay. And then the paramedics rushed by to get him. By the time he made it to the hospital, he was pronounced, you know, DOA, dead on arrival. There were no marks on his body at all that could be seen. There was just a little bit of blood on his face. That's it. Just a little bit of blood. So, very, very, very sad. I don't know. Like, I just, you, and like, looking on the outside in, if this kid is not moving and they're gray and they're cold, I mean, that tells us exactly what's going on. But I could not imagine being a mother.
Oh my god.
Because you're not going to want to connect those things. You're going to say, no, we can fix this. Yeah. You know, we can do whatever we got to do. And I just...
You don't want to give up on your kid.
No. Not at all. And especially, like, the way that she portrays herself. She seems like she was a good mom. You know, like, she still misses him so much. So after this, the police did begin their investigation. First thought was that he was poisoned by household drugs and tablets because upstairs... In one of the areas that they were playing, there were tablets all over the floor. Mm-hmm. And they examined his throat. Nothing could be found that would suggest the violence, like a strangulation or something. The paper listed him as the Rat Alley Boy, which, of course, you know, June took immense offense to because, like, this is my son. He has a name. His name is Martin. You know, he has no association with rats and everything that they reduced the whole situation down to. Yeah. I mean, they just completely tossed away the pain of the mother.
Dehumanize him as just this Rat Alley guy.
Yeah.
Boy, that some kid in the slums.
I hate it.
It makes me sad.
I really do hate it. So, yeah, let's see here. On the 27th of that month, there was a break-in at a nursery. Officers, y'all can't talk today, but that's just me every day, so y'all will understand sometimes.
We're in it together. We're going to make it through.
Annie understands.
We're going to do it.
All right, so Ossifers. Ossifers. I'm just going with it. Ossifers. We're going to go with it. They found 4 pieces of paper that were threatening to, like, murder furthermore in the future.
I'm sorry.
I know.
I have the church giggles. Okay, it's not funny.
It's not so, why I keep losing my place. Okay. Point at my note Hold to on. Know where I'm at. Okay.
So there was a letter, a note that threatened more murders.
Four
more murders. So yes. It said, I'm going to murder again times four.
Yes, exactly.
Got it.
And then one of them took ownership of killing Martin, and it warned other people to watch out.
Ooh.
So at school, Mary Beth wrote in her school book about the crowd in front. I have so many. Sorry, guys. I'm a grammar Nazi, and I keep seeing all my typos. Okay. Mary Beth wrote in her book about there being a crowd in front of the houses and that there was a dead boy laying there in the crowd. Below the description of everything that she had saw and she had written there, she drew a body of a dead boy with a bottle and a dot beside it, and the word tablet was written above the body.
Oh.
She also drew a paramedic that was, like, headed to, you know, assist the boy.
Yeah.
After Martin's death, Mary Bell and Norma were babysitting for June's sisters, and they asked her how she was doing and everything since, you know, losing Martin, and she said that the little girls seemed like they were concerned. But one day they showed up at June's house, and they were asking to see Martin. And she told them that he wasn't there because he was dead. And their response is, well, yeah, we know that. We just want to see the coffin. And we want to see him in the coffin.
I'm sorry.
This just screams.
Wow.
We did it.
And yeah, right.
We're
Talk about
heartless.
Yeah, basically. They're like, excuse me, I'd like and to see my hard work
yeah.
that I put in on
And that's,
murdering
she said
him.
At that point, that's when it was the breaking point for her.
Yeah.
Like, she, I think, was handling things okay for a bit. And then after that, I mean, and rightfully so. Like, I would have snapped.
I, could you imagine being a mother, first of all, losing your child to God knows what kind of death because, you know, they're investigating.
Mm-hmm.
And then having two little neighborhood girls knock on your door. Knock, knock, knock.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Miss June, can we see your son's dead body?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
It's like, yeah, sure, it's in the basement. What?
No. What like, I don't even know how I would, like, respond to that.
I also don't even get, because, like, these girls were so heavily suspected because they were so just mean and careless.
Yeah.
And yet, her sister still used them to babysit her child?
Wait, I missed that part.
Yeah, because that's what it was. It was, like, June's sister. That's when they went, so when she saw him
oh.
at first, because, you know, she was
yeah.
at her sister's, and the kids were supposed to be babysitting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they were like, hey, how have you been doing? How things been going? And then later they just
that's
show
right,
up
that's
at the
right,
house.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh,
like, what?
No
if you
thanks.
Had any suspicions at all with these
no
two, you're not, there's no way you're coming to
I'm
my
not,
kids.
Yeah, right.
No.
Right.
And then furthermore, none of my 3 and 4 year olds are running around by themselves in broken down rubble.
No, mine don't
I mean,
either. But here's the thing about that. You know, in other countries, they don't have as much, they're not quite as over helicoptery like we are with our kids.
True. But I mean, that's come over time too. Because we
yeah.
used to be the same way, doors true. Wide open. And
absolutely. So I can't judge that too much. But I certainly wouldn't be like, hey, little girl that put a cigarette out on a kid's face at school, would you like to watch my 4-year-old?
And then also tried strangling 2 other children.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just like, what?
No big deal. Just
no.
come on over anytime, ma'am.
Yeah, nah. Mm-mm, no way. Mm-mm. So, in spite of literally all of these clues, no one connected anything back to Mary Bell and Norma.
That's not, especially after the picture.
Just like nothing.
That she drew.
Yeah, yeah, they were like, whatever, it's just a circumstance, you know, coincidence or whatever. And so, a few months later, there was another victim that had died. 3-year-old Brian Howe was playing unsupervised and went to watch Rat Alley's demolition. I can't talk today. Demolition, y'all. No one even noticed that he was gone until it was nighttime. So at this point, when they arrived on the scene, they immediately called murder. It was straight up murder. He was laying by some bushes, spread eagle, half naked.
Mm.
There were chunks of his hair that had been cut out and puncture wounds all down his legs. And they connected, you know, it had to be the scissors that were the puncture wounds. And the punctures were post-mortem.
Okay.
He had been strangled to death. The officers noted that the way that this was handled by the culprit indicated that there was a sense of gentleness to the murder, so they immediately began routing it back to the possibility of the suspect being a child. So with this case of everything happening and the way that it was happening, they reopened Martin's case.
Well, thank God.
I know, right? It's just like, you need to really pay for your sins. I hate to say that. And I'm not religious, but,
Well, you should at the very least not be able to create more.
Exactly. And sense. You need to be held accountable to all the other ones you've committed.
Yes.
Almost immediately, Mary Bell entered every single person's mind whenever they reopened the case.
Yeah, they're like, oh, it's Mary Bell.
Yep, that's, oh, never mind. It's we crazy should have paid attention.
Little girl with piercing blue eyes is out here stabbing people with scissors after they're dead.
Uh-huh, yeah, and then like, oh, I'm sorry, you already put that cigarette. Would you like another one? I can light another one, and you can just, like, burn it out on somebody else. Just, like, that's how I feel like this is looked at, honestly.
It's crazy to me.
Oh, my gosh. You can't tell that we are very sarcastic people.
I feel like they can tell. Okay. Can you tell?
Can you tell that we're really sarcastic?
I hope so. If not, oops.
I think I'm the queen of this.
Daisies.
Alrighty, so, the officers noted that, I already said that part, so sorry. I am not even together today, y'all. I'm so sorry, Annie. I'm not together.
Listen, quit apologizing to me, okay?
Okay.
Well, I'm just still trying to process while you're reading.
I think maybe that's it, too. I'm just like, and I was like, I know I took my medicine. During the press conferences, oh, this is the part, too, that was chilling to me.
Okay, I'm ready.
During the press conferences, Mary Bell would shove her way to the front of the crowd every single time. She had a violent past, of course, in the strangling and assaulting other people. And Mary had even took credit for the murder of the playground. The murder on the playground at school. So the guy that was always doing the press conferences, that's just what he pointed out. He's like, I'll never forget that that's what she would do every single time. She would just, like, shove everybody out of the way. Right in front of me. And, you know, just that face. You know, that stare that she had. Where, like, she's proud of, I don't know, just, it's horrible. So, after this, the police finally went to the Bell home to question Mary Bell, but the father threatened to sick the family dog on them and refused to allow anyone to question her. There was one witness in regards to Brian's murder. It was a 9-year-old boy, and he saw everything that had happened, but at the time he had a mental age of 4. Mm-hmm. So, he conveyed to the police that from what he saw, she would massage the young boy's necks, mention to him that they were going to get a sore throat, and then she's like, it's okay, I'll make it better, and then she would strangle them.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's just so specific and weird.
So strange.
Just like, I don't get it.
Like,
11-year-old.
11-year-old. And 3-4-year-old boys. That's her go-to.
Three and a four. I just... Whew. I don't know.
That's heavy.
I'm trying to think about, like, what I was doing when I was 11.
Well, I wasn't strangling people.
No.
And I certainly wasn't smoking and putting out cigarettes on people's faces.
No.
So, can't relate.
So, hey, we already are better at that, you know? I'm just, like, just typical, and I don't like using the word normal people or children.
You know what I was doing at 11?
But...
I was listening to Hanson and
dancing
around my room like a lunatic. That's what I was doing at 11.
I was not dancing because I'm just not great at that. But, yeah, no, I was, like, listening to Backstreet Boys and Spice Girls.
Hell yeah.
And, like, Eminem had come out. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, yes. We're 90s babies.
That's where we are.
It's exactly where it is. Sitting on our giant inflatable couches
purple.
And stuff.
Yes, I had a purple one too. I had a beaded doorway and a purple inflatable couch.
Yes.
It was the time.
And one of my friends got a feather stuck in one of them. So when he, like, blew it up, there was, like, a feather from one of my feather boas floating around. Yes, Kayla, if you were listening, I'm talking about you.
That's funny.
I mean, that's what we were doing when we were 11.
Right. I was watching, you know.
Reading books in a tree is what I was doing.
Right.
Alrighty, so, this poor kid, he was the only witness, and sadly, he couldn't completely convey what was going on. So, finally, the police consulted with a child psychiatrist on how to confront the children involved with the two murders. Yeah, how do we talk to these people that scare us?
It's about time. Yeah, right.
We're terrified of these two young kids. So, whenever Mary was put on trial, naturally she denied anything and everything that would happen. And then she would just divert her attention to other things, like asking where her mom was, if she could see her mom, where was her dog, how was her dog. And she would just like start laughing and talking about how the day that had happened was filled with so much happiness between her and Norma.
Oh.
But she's totally, she didn't do it. She didn't do it. Like, that was the best day of her life.
Yeah.
But she didn't do it.
Also, where's my dog?
Exactly. Just want to say, where's my dog? So, yeah. Pretty crazy. It was noted that she was... And like I said, I always come back to, like, the idea of Ted Bundy. Because he was a charmer. You know, so many people liked him. He was very vivacious. And that's how they describe hers. She was a vivacious character. Someone that was actually really easily likable. And at a early of an age as it was, they just felt like she couldn't contemplate or realize the gravity of what her actions were. So,
I mean,
I think at 11 you should know not to kill people.
I think at 11 you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like an age of accountability. It's a real thing.
Like, I think you know. At 11.
Yeah. So yeah, they're like, oh, she just doesn't understand what actually happened. Oh, Britain. I love it. Actually, I really do love you, Britain. One day I would love to live there. So the evidence finally just started stacking up. They found the notes. They found the scissors. Her notebooks at school always were referencing the dead boy found in the old house. She still denied the allegations. The police never even disclosed that there were tablets that killed Martin.
Oh.
So her note with Mary, the tablets.
Mary, you done told on yourself, girl, drawing that picture of them tablets. You done told on yourself.
In front of the whole school, could have got a hold of that. Mm-hmm. And then they still... and like I'm saying, too, like, they saw that then. And they never released that information.
Right.
So why didn't you immediately go to the person talking about the information that no one is supposed to know?
Yeah, what about that? I have questions.
We always have questions.
I need to know.
So, yes, her and Norma were finally declared murderers. They said that she showed zero emotion during the trial, and that she only gave, like, direct answers to people, maintaining the stance that she was not guilty of the crimes that had happened. So the trial lasted for 9 days. Norma was declared too inept to carry out the deeds. And that Mary Bell basically was...
Damn.
They were saying she's stupid.
Norma is dumb.
Yeah, that's basically
Norma can't
it.
Do it. She's not capable of such things.
Why are we...
Honestly, poor Norma. Because she probably was just wanting to be loved and accepted by somebody.
My thing is she was too scared of her to be like, no, I won't be your friend.
Too. Yeah, probably that too.
I feel like she was just too scared. And you know what, Norma? I would have been terrified too.
Same, Norma.
Too.
Me too, yes. Girl. Don't you feel bad about what... Well,
nope.
I mean, feel a little bad about what you did. But also, don't feel too bad because, like, same.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know that she actually committed the acts. I mean, I fully believe that Mary Bell did everything.
Yeah.
That Norma
and we don't know that she was willing either. So
yeah.
Bless you, Norma. I'm sorry you're inept.
So, yeah, that's what they said to her. They said that she was coerced into doing everything, you know, by Mary Bell. So, yeah, they declared that Mary Bell herself was a psychopath due to her lack of human emotion and empathy and her absolute cunning and brilliance. These are words that they have used.
Okay, hold on. I'm having a moment. Imagine poor Norma. Now that I'm thinking about Norma, I just
feel
really
bad. Baby,
we're
going to let you slide because you're too dumb to do nothing.
I just feel like, imagine you're a little girl and you're like, I just want to be friends with somebody.
Yes.
And this little other girl is with... blue eyes and crazy eyes.
And she's pretty. I want to say, though, like, she is really pretty.
I'll play with you, but in order to play with me, you gotta murder everyone. And you're just like, okay.
It's like, can I not do it? But I'm like, there, you know?
Right.
Like, I'll help you bury the body. You know? I don't know.
It just makes
me
feel bad.
It does. Yeah, it really does. Because I just feel like, because they did. They said that she was simple-minded. She was inept.
She didn't know.
So I feel bad. I'm so sorry, Norma.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
It's cool. So they attempted to rehabilitate Mary Bell.
I'm so sorry. No.
Instead of sending her to jail or having her committed for life.
Commit her.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Yeah. Like, let's just...
That's multiple murders.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she was sent to a special school.
Yeah.
Where she could attend and be properly loved and given care. to replace what she'd never had due to the neglect of her life, which I can see that. That's nice, you know, but I'd be terrified. This chick's about to stab me in my sleep.
Right.
So they would capitalize on children's talents, you know, which is also a great idea, instead of focusing on the things that they're not great at or something, you know, else that was wrong.
Right.
So I do think that that's a cool idea. But still, rehabilitating a child murderer, like, I feel like that's ingrained at that point. Like, that's, there's more to that than, I don't know. Anyways, we'll get there. But, so they declared that she was a victim of circumstance.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Because she had
because
such
of
a
her living condition.
Yeah. Because she had such a rough life in Rat Alley. So, due to her mom being a sex worker and her dad being abusive and all the physical violence and trauma and the suggested sexual violence toward Mary Bell, they thought that it was basically, hey, we can maybe remove her from the situation, show her what she needs, and then if she gets better, all is good. And that's what happened.
That's how I feel about it.
I know.
I feel like, yeah, okay, so maybe she needs a chance. But also, like, this wasn't like an accidental whoopsie doopsie.
Oh, no. It was like, this was calculated.
Yes, and it was also post-mortem
mutilation?
Thank you, yes. Yeah. I was like, manipulation? That's not right.
That was before then. Post-mortem,
like,
manipulation
yeah.
was before.
So, that's different, I think, psychologically than just like, ooh, I killed him. Oh my god, I regret it.
Yeah.
It's like, I killed him and then I maimed his body.
I mean, and the other ones, too. It's like, hey, I'm going to lure you to the sweet shop.
Yeah.
Like, she thought about this. She
Come
had them
to
picked
the sweet
out.
Shop so yes. I can give you pills.
Like, this lady was a future Mrs. Lovett, I swear.
Ooh.
Like, at some point. Let's see. Okay, so Mary Beth ended up, she blamed her mom for everything that ever happened to her.
Of course she
and
did.
She blamed her, you know, saying that I did this because of you, basically.
Of course.
And that her mom needed to own up to the fact that she created a monster and it was all her fault. So, after all that had happened, there were other people that believed that it was like a power play. Because, you know, I know with a lot of women, too, I'm not saying obviously all of them, but when it comes to these situations, like, power is something that they feed off of, they gravitate toward. And then you have, like, this older girl. I mean, she couldn't have done that to anyone else. It would have to be the younger kids.
Yeah.
So it was, like, a source of maybe her feeling like she was powerful.
Right.
So she spent 12 years locked away for the crimes against the boys, and I put and their families, because it's very important that we remember their families.
Yes.
She spent 6 years at that special school in Red Bank where she was the only girl among boys. She had therapy while she was there, and she was still passing her crimes off on other people. Eventually, she
so
was...
no accountability.
None. At all. And how do you declare
Which
her,
means
okay?
no remorse.
Yeah. None. Okay. I don't understand it. Eventually, she was not considered a threat anymore. And her name, she legally changed it so that she could have a new life, and she was declared a stable citizen that was fully rehabilitated. You cannot be
at 23?
Fully... Yeah, I guess
she was 23.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Good lord.
But how can you be fully rehabilitated when you still are denying things and when you're still trying to put it off on someone else?
Yeah, if you aren't taking
like
accountability,
you're not...
how are you rehabilitated?
Exactly.
Isn't that like the first
step? I didn't
step?
Do it, you did it.
It's like, okay, I did this and now I'm going to try not to do it again.
Exactly. I that's the part that stems me. I'm like, there's no way that's rehabilitation. So, with these incidents, that changed the society of the alley completely. Children were no longer unaccounted for, and I put thank you in capital letters.
Right, about time, alley.
Crime actually began to climb a little bit more, as well as the violence. Doors were opened before all the events. Now people were locking everything up tight. Kids were walked to school, picked up from school. I mean, it really doubled down on everything. So
they weren't just worried about their pantaloons anymore.
Nope. Nobody cares about them pantaloons. So the one thing that was drawn from the case was just the heavy emphasis on the nature versus nurture argument. And like, should a child be given a loving, stable home, these things would not have happened. That's BS. There's plenty of serial killers that have had awful lives growing up and they have this problem. They've had great lives growing up and then when they still have this problem.
Yeah.
So I don't think I call that on BS. Like, it could go either way. Right. Yes, I think it was a huge contribution, obviously.
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, it definitely shaped who she was and what she thought, what her morality
exactly what was her normal
would be. Yeah, like if, you know, if she's seeing people lie, steal, and cheat all the time, then she's like, well, I'm going to lie, steal, and cheat all the time.
Exactly. So and I get it. She's exposed to the violence. She's exposed to all kinds of other trauma. Yeah. And I'm not discounting any of that.
Right. But she could have still been exposed to all of that and had present parents and ended up still having murdered.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So it might have just accelerated. Way. Surely. Maybe it accelerated her.
That's murder. True, because I do believe that some people are just born killers.
I think so, too.
I really do think that no matter what you do, you cannot give them the best life in the world because it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, the worst life in the world, and people still turn out well.
Yeah.
You know, there's just so many angles to that.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I was sitting there like, I have all the questions, like, by myself in my room as I'm watching this. So, yeah, that's kind of what I would like to ask the audience here is, what do you think about nature versus nurture? And do you think she actually was rehabilitated or still a skilled psychopath?
Yeah, I want to know. What are your thoughts? I think she's a psychopath.
I agree.
And she's out there still alive, probably, right? She was 11 in 1969.
Yeah.
How do we do math? Who can do math? So she's what, like... Shoot, I'm not a math person.
I am not. So
she's
got to
be like 50.
22 minus 11.
She's got to be 50. Wait, no. Listen to us do math. This is a math podcast. La da 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 da. Enjoy my singing.
So,
well, if so you she's take, like 65?
About to say, yeah, if you take now, subtract the 1968, that's 54, and then she was 11.
So 65?
Yeah, she was older.
Okay, so...
I need to know, Norma, what your actual name is now, because I have questions. But then again, I don't want you to know where I'm at, so...
Let's not beckon. Let's not beckon that. But that's just so interesting. Like, she's, like, my mom's age. Sorry, Mom. Telling on you.
Hey, that's not
she's,
old.
Like, my mom's age. And the fact that, like, she's been out there living life for 40 years. Well, maybe she is rehabilitated if she hadn't killed anybody.
I just... No. I can't.
I just have questions.
I can't. I feel like if you're that callous and you were that...
There's just something to say about it.
I don't know.
Which also, like, in general, just with child killers, which I'm sure we'll do an episode on that.
I think I did put that on our schedule.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. Because there's one case I really want to talk about because the gentleman... who was the child killer just got released in February.
Oh my gosh, I hate that too, when they just walk.
Okay. Well, he didn't walk. He served his time. He's an adult now.
Well.
And his time's over, and he got out.
Yes, I'm curious. Yeah.
Anyway, but we'll talk about it. If you know who it is, then you'll already know what's coming. But, I don't know. Child killers is such a sensitive subject, and, you know, we can touch on this more later, but it's just kind of like, how do you determine... which child is worth rehabilitating?
Yeah,
so
worth, like, actually. Because, I mean, I feel like there is just some evil that we sense.
Yeah.
On a deeper level anyways. I feel like that kind of evil is not something that can be erased.
No. And I just want to see her picture now.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait to see it.
I'll post it. Like I said, she's actually rather pretty.
Of course. It's always the pretty ones. So, you know? Yeah. Those pretty ones are vicious. Okay.
Are you ready? I'm always ready.
I need to breathe while you spill your tea.
Yes. I'm going to have t-shirts made that say that.
Let's get a snack. Let's rehydrate. I'm getting ready. Okay, so we are going to talk about a female killer. But first, we're going to talk about our victim, okay? Because the victim is who matters the most. But
exactly.
Before I even get into it, trigger warning for suicide, stabbing, blood, and general mismanagement by the police force.
I just love how precious you are too, like every little thing. And I'm like, I don't even think about that stuff. I'm like, well, I'm like so used to it. She's like such like the sweet empath and everything. And I lost my empathy a long time ago.
Hey, I've been jaded before. I just came back around. You know what I mean? I can't help it. Okay, so let's talk about Betsy first. Betsy Faria is who we're talking about. If you know the case of Betsy Faria, then you will understand everything I'm about to say. But Betsy Faria was born on March the 24th, 1969. She was a phenomenal human being based on all accounts. She was funny. She was kind. She was popular. She loved to make people happy. She loved dancing. She loved, you know, having a good time. She played softball in high school and just was all around, like, super fun. She was also a part-time DJ, and she would DJ people's parties and things like that, and I just think that's so cool.
Literally, in my mind, I went from, like, prom queen to just, like, all-around kind of badass.
She was just, and she also had piercing blue eyes, but they weren't crazy. They were beautiful, and she has this bright smile. You can see her pictures on her Instagram as well. But she was just this magnificent human being, and she ended up meeting the love of her life, and that was Russell Faria, and they got married and started their life together. Russ was like this dude that had a rough exterior but like a soft interior, you know what I mean? Like, Russ was cool, but he like loved wearing fedora hats and just kind of looked like not somebody that is like a warm and fuzzy somebody. But he was really just a teddy bear on the inside. So,
and don't tell anyone, but it sounds like my daddy.
No. So, but they got married and started their life together. And Betsy had always wanted to be a mom. That was just something she had dreamed of being. And they had two little girls and had just this wonderful family. And she tells Russ, she's like, hey, Russ, you got to go back to school and get your degree. I think it'd be good for us. So Russ goes back to school, gets a degree, and starts working in IT. And he works with Enterprise. And Betsy's working with State Farm Insurance, and they're just kind of living life, raising their kids and working. And unfortunately, in January of 2010, Betsy gets diagnosed with breast cancer. Aww. And she is devastated. And the family is trying to cheer her up. Everyone kind of rallies around her. She's got great family, great friends, this incredible support system, her husband, her two kids. She's going to chemotherapy. She always has somebody with her. She never has to go alone. She's being very well taken care of, very well supported throughout her, you know, journey with cancer. And she ends up going into remission. And the family is just overjoyed. Everyone is so happy, and they, you know, she's gone into remission, and they decide that they want to celebrate by going on a celebration of life cruise. So they're so excited about this, and Betsy's always had this dream of swimming with dolphins, and so she's just like, hell yeah, let's go dance on the ship and see some dolphins.
She's so cool.
And right before they leave for the cruise, Betsy finds out that her cancer has come back.
No.
And it's beyond aggressive, and it's metastasized, which means it's spread to different organs, and at this point it's kind of a terminal situation.
I'm really sad about this.
So you know, everybody was just devastated, but they decide November 2011 they're going on this cruise anyway. They're gonna go make these amazing memories with Betsy, and then when they get home from the cruise, Betsy's gonna fight like hell to try to beat this cancer. And so they come on back, and she starts her chemotherapy, and she's, you know, going to treatment several times a week, that sort of a thing. And like I said, Betsy's never alone at treatment. She's either going with her mom, or Russ is taking her. She's got a slew of friends
that
could take her, which is amazing. One of those friends, of course, is named Pamela Hupp. Pamela Hupp and Betsy were co-workers at State Farm together, but they weren't really close. And they didn't start becoming closer until after Betsy comes back from her Celebration of Life cruise. Pam did not go on that cruise, but it is rumored that Pam did not, she was just very particular about how she spent her money, and she didn't tend to spend money on things like vacations, so that could be the reason why she didn't go. She could have not been invited. I'm not really sure on that one, but she did not go on the cruise. She did, however, get very close with Betsy after she returned from the cruise, and she actually was transporting her to treatment very frequently. And so one Tuesday morning, sorry, I'm having some reflux issues, girl.
I'm sorry. Do you need a sip of water?
No, I feel like that would make it worse. Okay. So I'm just going to make some weird mouth noises and move on. So Betsy's like, I got to go to treatment today. Pam was supposed to drive her, but, Pam was supposed to take her, but, you know, Betsy wakes up and Betsy had a babysitter when she was little named Bobby, who was her mom's family friend, and Bobby was in town, and Bobby really wanted to take Betsy, and Betsy just really wanted some good alone time with Bobby. You know, she really wanted to spend time with her friend without anyone else, and so she texts Pam, and she's like, hey, boo. Well, she probably didn't say it like this, but you know how I am. Hey, boo, me and Bobby are going to go to treatment together today. Thank you so much, but I won't be needing you to take me. I'm going to spend some one-on-one time with Bobby. Have a great day. Mm-hmm. And
is this her right?
Right. And so Pam replies back to the text message, sends a reply. So it's obvious that Pam saw the message and then wrote back to the message. But Pam shows up to pick up Betsy for chemotherapy anyway.
Like she didn't even get anything.
Like she didn't know. And she shows up to Betsy's mom's house to pick her up because that's where Betsy had stayed the night because it was closer to treatment and that had happened frequently. And so Betsy had stayed there the night before. She shows up. She knocks on the door. Pam's like, hey, man, I'm here to take Betsy. And Betsy's mom's like, well, her friend Bobby took her, you know, to chemo already. Sorry, you just missed her. And, you know, Pam's like, oh, I had no idea. Pam is like, oh, I had no idea. And I'm like, Pam, you're a liar. But, okay. So instead of going home, bold little Pam drives up to chemotherapy and just invites herself in with Bobby and Betsy and sits down to be a part of chemo.
Because being forceful always works.
Because nobody asked you to be here, Pam.
Oh, my goodness.
So Betsy's like, what are you doing here, Pam? Like,
I told
you. Know, and
Pam's like, oh. And I read that you saw the message.
Yeah, and Pam's like, oh, I just didn't know. So she's like, okay, cool. Well, me and Bobby are going to, like, finish up the treatment, whatever. And then, you know, afterwards, Betsy's feeling, like, weak and tired. You know, chemotherapy will kick your butt. It literally is life-saving, but it kills everything, including cancer. So I can't imagine being on chemotherapy personally, but
mostly I've known several people and they said it was some of the worst stuff, that and radiation both.
Yeah, I mean, it's just awful. So, you know, Pam is like, well, let's get you home, get you to sleep. You know, you clearly have had a long day, whatever, whatever. So Russ has actually worked from home, and he had been working from home that day until about 5 p.m. Now, every week, Russ was our kind of guy, okay? And here's why. Russ had a group of friends. There's usually 4, 5, 6 of them or so, and they all meet on Tuesday nights to play like a dice role-playing game, kind of like Dungeons and Dragons, but they didn't ever specify what the game was. And so Russ is like, hey, I'm ready to go out for my Tuesday night man thing. He's texting Betsy throughout the day. She's like, oh, Russ, I forgot my keys. I don't have them. And Russ is like, no big deal. I'll just leave the door unlocked for you, and I'm going to head out to my dude's
Guys,
night.
Don't leave the doors unlocked. So
he's like, I'll leave the door unlocked, honey. You know, glad to know chemo went well. Take care of yourself. I'll see you when I get home, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, okay, Pam insisted on bringing me home. And she'll bring me home. And he's like, okay, did she picked you up? She got you. And she's like, yes, Pam is bringing me home. So he heads out, and he's going to go to his friend's house to play the game. So he leaves the house and goes to a convenience store and grabs 2 Snapples and some cigarettes around 5:56 p.m. and heads over to his friend's house, and he's said to arrive there around 6 p.m. But when he gets there, they didn't end up having enough people there to play the game. So they just smoked some weed and, like, watched some shows on TV.
I mean, you know.
I mean, I get it.
Pretty chill night, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, just chilling, whatever. So that's where he is. And then around 7-ish p.m., I believe, is when Pam says Pam takes Betsy home. She has multiple versions to her story. In fact, Pam's story changes very frequently. And she says, oh, well, I just dropped her off, and I didn't even go inside. Oh, I went inside, I tucked her in on the couch, and then let myself out. Oh, I went inside,
drew her all the
way to we went all the way to her bedroom because she wanted to show me a jewelry case that Russ got her, and then she walked me to the door. And I may have seen a silver Maxima in the driveway, or maybe it was a black SUV, or blah, 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 blah. So Pam, and literally blah, 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 that is how Pam answered questions and would, she would expound upon her statements with the words blah, 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 blah. So Pam just wasn't very helpful, to be honest.
I'm sorry, yeah. I can't help it. I had to.
So Pam has a million stories for what's going on, and it's just not helpful. But unfortunately, and this is 2 days after Christmas, by the way.
Oh, okay. So holiday spirit.
On December 27th, 2011, at 9 p.m., Russ leaves his friend's house, okay?
And he left Ford at 6, so this is a 3-hour window?
Mm-hmm. Okay. On the way home, he stops at Arby's at 9.09 p.m., and there's a receipt that he has that proves his time. And then he goes home, and upon returning home, he finds Betsy lifeless on the floor. She's covered in blood. Her wrists are slashed all the way to the bone.
Oh, my God.
And she has a knife protruding from her neck. So at 9:40 is when Russ makes the 911 call. And he is absolutely hysterical in the call. I mean, because...
Hello. I mean, you're walking in on your wife, like, literally all you've been through together.
Who you're already terrified of losing because she's in a terminal cancer state. You know, it's not, like, yes, we're all afraid of losing our spouses, but most people, unless you're like me, like, don't think of it frequently. You know, like, you're not going through a random Tuesday like, oh my God, my wife could die at any minute.
Yeah.
But, like, he knew she was already medically fragile and, like...
It's one thing to expect that happening, but not murder.
Right. Exactly. Like, that's not how anyone saw this going.
Unfolding, yeah.
Yeah. So he calls 911, and he's like, it's so sad. I listened to the 911 call, and he's like, in one part of it, he's like, what am I gonna do? Like, he was so sad. But he tells the 911 operator, he's like, my wife's killed herself. She killed herself. Like...
Do you want to, like, include that at the end? Like, I don't know if you still have it or not.
I can find it, and we can put a clip of it up on Instagram Reels. Yeah.
Let's do that.
And so, yeah, he's like, she killed herself. Like, help. Come help us. And so the police come, and the first thing they notice when they get there is that this is definitely not a suicide.
Well, as for someone that knows a little bit about this, there's no way in hell... If she has gone that deep and the ligaments and everything, that she would have had the dexterity to put it in her...
And her neck.
Her neck.
Yeah, exactly. And so the police are like, this isn't a suicide, Russ. Like, you've clearly murdered your wife. But it's understandable... Oh, it turns out... Don't let me leave this detail out because it's huge. Betsy was stabbed 55 times.
What the hell?
She was stabbed 55 times, and the stab wounds were underneath her clothing. So, you know... That's probably why, you know, he probably just saw all this blood in her wrists.
Yeah, and it will. I mean, he's that
like,
is a lot.
But... Oh, God, she's killed herself. Like, he doesn't know.
Oh my
and
gosh.
She also, of course, like, with terminal cancer, with cancer diagnosis comes depression. And with depression can come suicidal thoughts. So this, you know, Betsy had attempted previously to take her own life, and she did so by slashing her wrists.
Okay.
So for Russ, it wasn't that far off, like of an assumption.
Could have happened. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, damn, she actually went through with it. I hate this, you know?
Yeah.
And anyway, but the police, they're like, no, Russ, you're suspicious as hell. We don't trust you, and I get it. It's always the spouse first,
yeah.
Right? So they don't want to focus on anyone else. They lock eyes on Russ. They don't even care to question Pam. They just straight up take Russ into interrogation. Now, keep in mind, Russ had been smoking weed, okay?
Yeah.
He came home. He got his little his Arby's sandwiches, munchies.
Mm-hmm.
He's ready to conk in for the night, and he finds his wife dead. And these police take him in.
Way to sober up fast.
And interrogate him for 10 hours. So he's exhausted. He's worked all day. He's high. He's hungry. He's full. He's exhausted. And then emotionally has this crazy situation happen.
And you know they're also trying to trap him with 10 hours of investigations.
And I don't even know that he, like, thought that at all. Like, he seems like he was just like, what happened to my wife. Like, he had no idea. Like, they're telling him, like, no, your wife was stabbed. And he's just like, oh, God.
At that point, like, he's expecting, like, the paramedics.
Yeah, he's like, what do you mean? What do you mean? Like, I don't understand. They said he's, like, 1 second hysterical, the next second he's kind of giggly. Like, but again, he's stoned. Like,
well, I mean, and who knows? Like, and exhausted. We all handle everything differently, and some of it very inappropriately, ergo, like, just the church giggles, you know? Like,
yeah,
that's
right.
Not a great,
thank you.
It's not a great thing to say, but, like, it happens that you just don't cope very well with some stuff, and that's how you deal with it.
It's just, you know, it's part of it. So, he's in there getting interrogated, excuse me, and he's,
okay, awesome.
Sometimes he's crying with tears, sometimes he's crying with not, but in the police's mind, they're like, this confirms
that
he's the
this.
One. And so they're like, okay, go to his house and look through the crime scene and see what we can find. The only thing they found was one pair of Russ's slippers with a couple of drops of blood on them on the side of the slipper and not on the bottom. So the slippers were not walked through blood.
Yeah, something dropped in on there.
It looked like either they were dipped in it or it had dripped on it. But they weren't, like, worn and walked through a bunch of blood, right? So we'll come back to a little bit of that, but that was the only thing they found. Also, there was a security camera that showed Russ wearing the same clothing earlier in the evening that he had on when the police came, and there was zero blood found on his clothing, mm-hmm. No blood on Russ at all, not even under his fingernails, which you can't even really clean. So there's no blood on him, no blood. But the police are like, no, this was a very passionate murder. You definitely killed your wife. It had to be you. Nobody else would do this. Like, it doesn't make sense. And they're interrogating him. He's like, I absolutely was not there. I didn't murder my wife. I wasn't there. I wasn't there. I wasn't there. They're like, we're going to make you take a lie detector test.
Never, never. They're just, aren't they inadmissible now?
They're inadmissible. They aren't even they're pseudoscientific.
Horrible.
They don't even really make sense. So
I'm just, like, still they're committed to it being him, even though everything else is so consistent to the fact that
That it's not even that it's not him, but just that it could have been someone else.
Yeah.
It's not even that, oh, there's no way in hell it was Russ, but it just, the idea that, like,
anyone,
you know,
yeah,
let's talk to the person who saw her alive last, Pamela, and maybe get her side of the story. Well, that's what they thought to do the next morning.
Of course.
So they go in, they're like, rappity tap tap on Pamela's door.
Oh,
hey,
Pam.
Hey, girl, we have some questions for you. And Pam's like, oops, sorry, just got out of the shower. She had freshly showered. And they sit down, they have a good little kiki together. She's like, oh yeah, also showered last night, hee hee hee. And they're like, oh, ha ha ha, like, we're here to talk about your best friend Betsy.
Moida.
We're talking about best friend Betsy. We want to know about Mr. Russ. Oh, you know, tell us about Russ. And so Pam's like, well, Russ is a violent-tempered man.
Oh my goodness.
He has a violent temper. He's abusive. Him and Betsy don't get along very well. Betsy wanted to move closer to where her treatment was. Betsy wanted to leave him. She was going to tell him tonight. And, you know, I thought it was weird that I left her at her house where the doors had been unlocked. And, you know, maybe I feel a little guilty about doing that. Maybe I should, I don't know. Things were just weird. And maybe his car was there, but maybe it wasn't. Or maybe a different car that wasn't his. Or that was his was there. Pam's story was all over the place. She was all over the place. But the police were like, hey, did you got an alibi? And she's like, you know what? I don't. No alibi.
It's okay then.
So sorry. And it was just crazy. But Pam basically wanted to paint this picture that her husband, Russ, or not her husband, Betsy's husband, Russ, was the person who killed Betsy. But Russ had a great alibi. Russ's alibi was pretty solid. In fact, Russ would have only had, if you calculate the times, Russ would have only had 9 minutes to get home, stab Betsy 55 times, clean up the crime scene and all the blood, and then make the 911 call.
You still would be, honestly, like, in the middle of the whole murdering thing.
I mean, there's no way. And when they found Betsy and they got to her, she had been in rigor. So she'd been dead for at least an hour. So it just, none of the time is adding up at all for it to be Russ, okay? But instead, the police are like, you know what, we got enough evidence. So January the 4th of 2012, Russ is charged with the murder of his wife, Betsy. He is arrested, and he goes to jail, and he starts to await trial. the trial begins, and during the trial, basically none of the things were allowed to be put, like, none of the court, or the, I can't even talk, I'm so mad right now, let me take a breath.
I'm just like, he was literally with, like, six other dudes.
Four other men.
And half the time, their wives may or may not be there. I don't know. It depends on our, you know, your gaming groups. And it's like, yeah, none of them were able to say, hey, he was here. And
they all did. They all said it. But the police said, and in the trial, they tried to make it look like, well, those four friends set up your alibi for you so you wouldn't get caught. And because he had stopped on the way home so much, like, to get his food, and then he had also stopped that night for cigarettes and for Snapples, that the police were like, you know what, you stopped too many times, you were clearly trying to make an alibi.
Yeah.
So you're even more suspicious for having an alibi.
He had to be on cams, too, for, like... Yeah. Yeah, okay.
So during the trial, like, they basically try to paint him in that light, and they don't ever really allow Pam to be seen as a suspect. They just kind of keep her as this friend who, you know, is helping Betsy. And it was just... I don't know, this is maddening. And, like, it was so bad to the point that even it's rumored, alleged, rather, that the two daughters of Betsy and Russ, like, question, like, did my dad do this? Like, did he really murder Mom? Like, you know, it's to the, like, they're so vindictive in the way that they portrayed this that it made it people that wouldn't have ever questioned him maybe looked at him a little different. But luckily... he did have a good family and friends that stood by him, but he did. On November the 21st, 2013, he was found guilty, and he was sentenced to life plus 30 years in prison for the murder of his wife, Betsy. And if you thought the story ended there, you're wrong! You are so wrong.
I just have so much going on in my brain now with things that I've been through, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's no way that you're going through that kind of violence... And you only tell one person.
Right. Right.
There's no way.
But hey, just hold on to your horses, girl.
Okay.
When I'm close. Saying. Keep those horses at bay. So he's in jail. He's fully convicted. Well, he's in prison, not jail. Fully convicted of murder. Like, oh my God, I didn't even kill my wife. I never did this. This is, I can't imagine that feeling. Like, nobody, like, just, I mean, I can't imagine a tighter alibi and... no blood evidence except for these damn slippers, and you get convicted for life.
Yeah.
So, anyway, February 24th, 2015, his defense lawyer, Joel Schwartz, who really did an incredible job, Joel's like, why the hell did y'all never question Pam? What are y'all thinking? You never went in to suspect, they questioned Pam, but you never suspected Pam enough to, like, investigate her when she was the person who saw Betsy alive last. And so he ends up getting a he got news that there was a hearing on a retrial motion ordered for Russ based on, you know, kind of some of the things that I'll get into in a second. But June the 5th, 2015, the judge orders a retrial for the murder of Betsy for Russell because, one, Pam's story has changed 555 times about whether or not she saw the man at the house the night of the murder or not. And two, it's discovered that in the week prior to her death, Betsy removes Russ as her beneficiary in her life insurance policy. And guess who she put in her place?
Hey, Pam, we got some questions.
Pam says that Betsy felt like Russ was just going to blow all the money whenever she died, and she wanted to make sure that her two daughters were taken care of, and she trusted Pam.
There's this thing called, you put it in a specific kind of account that they can't access until they reach age.
So Pam is like, yeah, I'll for sure, which it has to speak to Pam's manipulation tactics, because remember, both of them worked at State Farm Insurance. So they should be aware of how to do beneficiary and life insurance policies. But I'm sure Pam manipulated her in some way, but Pam's like promising Betsy, yeah, I'll make sure your daughters get the money. Well, it turns out the daughters never got the money. And because of the mismanagement in the beneficiary or life insurance policy money, that is why the retrial was allowed. But here's the other thing.
Something's amiss.
The paperwork that was signed, the beneficiary paperwork, didn't even make it to State Farm, because that's who they used for the horse. Didn't even make it to State Farm until the day after Betsy was found dead. And the agent that received it went ahead and honored the change, even though she was dead. But they didn't have to do that. It was up to the individual agent if they would honor the change or not. And they chose to honor the change, which I found super interesting. And then they went ahead and paid it out.
I'm just like Jake from State Farm.
Where you at, Jake? We got questions.
You know, we got some questions.
We got questions. So June the 16th, 2015, Russ is let out of jail on bond, and they're going to await the retrial. His retrial starts on November the 2nd, 2015, and by November the 6th, 2015, oh, so they did it without a jury. It was just going to be the judge. And so they presented all the evidence. They were allowed to use Pam this time. They were allowed to use all these things they weren't allowed to use before. And Russ is found not guilty. Okay. Thank God. Russ would go on to, just FYI, Russ would go on to do a civil suit, and he ended up with a $2 million payout for his the damages because of his
situation. Yeah, you got to have lawyer's fees unless they're provided for you. You've got to have all this loss of time while you were in prison, not to mention the mental issues that
I can't
taken
even imagine.
I mean, there's just so much that goes into that.
And whatever you saw
his
in
kids
prison,
didn't
too.
See his kids, you know?
And it's not like he was going to, like, county jail. He went to, like, prison.
Max. Yeah, like max.
Like, actual prison. So, but yeah, so it turns out, guess who never got any of the money? Their daughters.
Yeah.
Betsy's daughters were never given any of the life insurance money. They did try to go on and sue Pam, but this is maddening to me. The judge in that case was like, well, Betsy
was
knew.
Also a Pam.
Probably. It's not Karen anymore. Now it's Pam.
It's Pam.
The judge in that case was like, you know what? Betsy knew how to do life insurance. So if she wanted her kids to get that money, she would have filled out like the necessary stuff to get the kids that money. So we're not going to give you.
Which is exactly what I was saying. But at the same time, I'm not trying to like, it sounds horrible. It's going to come across, but like cancer brain. You know, she's going through so much stuff right now that she's not thinking everything through like she normally would.
Well, maybe she just really trusted Pam.
Oh,
like,
that,
maybe she's
too.
Like, oh my God, you know what? I'm not going to fool with setting up all this crazy trust and account
I'll sign
whatever.
It.
Like, I trust you. I believe you'll do this for me. Like, you know, this is, I mean, you're talking about somebody going out of their way to take you to treatments. Like, and they have a life too. You know, they've got work and kids. Pam has kids and a husband and all of that. So, like, I don't know. I guess if I was Betsy, I might trust her too. But then I wonder, like, what did Pam tell Betsy to make her think that Russ was going to do some crazy stuff with the money? So I don't know. But so all of this has taken place. Russ is finally found not guilty. He's acquitted of all charges. He can go out and live his life. And everything's looking up for him. I mean, as much as it can. Jesus Christ. The man
lost
his wife. Lost
a lot of time,
you know?
Wife, kids.
He was God, I don't even know. I can't even speak about
it. So much.
So then August 16th, 2016, Pam Hupp calls 911. She is on the phone with 911 screaming, stop, don't stop. And then suddenly 5 gunshots ring out. It turns out that Pam claims that she was attacked by a man named Louis Gumpenberger, and she was so afraid of him that she, quote, emptied her gun into him, and he had 5 gunshot wounds. She said that he had a note on him that stated that he was hired by Russ to murder her, and he had come to attack her with a knife. The police were like, what? When they got there, police realized that this was obviously a staged situation for multiple reasons. But first, Lewis was 33 years old. He had a previous brain injury. He also had some physical disabilities as well. For those that knew Lewis, they were like, there's no way in hell this man attacked you. He would have never done that. He wasn't even really allowed to drive a car by himself. Like, he just physically wouldn't have been capable of overpowering Pam, and he wouldn't have done it. That wasn't his disposition. So it was clear that Pam had lured Lewis and tricked him into recreating a 911 call by saying she was a producer of Dateline. And why do we know this? Because she tried to get a woman in the park to be the victim in this. But the woman, she said, I'll give you $100 if you come recreate this 911 phone call with me. I'm a producer.
Like, no, thanks.
I'm a producer at Dateline. This woman's like, okay, I mean, $100 is $100. Like, I'll do whatever you want. But then she was like, you know what?
Maybe not.
This probably, is this how they do it? You know, is Dateline really roaming the streets giving out $100 bills? Probably not. So she's like, no, thanks.
Free candy.
So I guess she finds, Pam goes on to find Lewis and unfortunately is successful in luring him back. And that's what they believe the 911 call was Pam. Lewis was thinking they're acting. Mm-hmm. And Pam was setting up
about to do.
The murder because she wanted to frame Russ again for the murder of Betsy, because if they're looking at Russ, they're not going to be looking at Pam. Pam was like, keep the eyes off me. So she ends up taking this man's life just to reframe Russ for the murder of Betsy. So Pam goes in for interrogation. While she's in for interrogation, she tries to kill herself. I believe she, correct me if I'm wrong, audience, I'm pretty positive she tried to stab herself in the neck.
Oh my God.
And I'm almost positive that it was with a ballpoint pen. But if you look up her mugshot on her Instagram, you can see in her mugshot she has gauze on her neck and she's got this awful smirk on her face. You ever just want to slap somebody?
Yeah, like you just know and it's like, okay.
It's just like a horrible smirk.
The end of like the Omen, and you know, yeah. It's just like creepy grin.
It's just like, yeah, this entitled smug look like, is how she looks.
I got
yeah.
away with it.
Oof, it's awful. I hate it.
Yep.
But yeah, she tried to, you know, end her life while she was in custody, which is not going to go well for her case. But she is like crazy. But then the police are like, well, that's weird that they would have this note about Russ trying to kill you because of Betsy's murder. Maybe we should look back into the murder
and also
of
like
Betsy.
Handwriting. Mm-hmm. That's a thing.
It
People
is.
People can look at the exact... Actually, that's also a whole cool subject.
So then, after these two things had happened, the judge is like, you know what? There's one other suspicious death we should look at. And that's the death of Pam's mother.
Oh my gosh!
So Pam's mom, sweet Shirley Newman, she was an elderly woman living in a retirement apartment. She had some Alzheimer's. She also had trouble sleeping, so she was prescribed Ambien. She had made Pam her beneficiary, probably not right before her death, but Pam was the beneficiary for her mom. Pam had gone to visit Shirley, and the following day, the housekeeper at her apartment found her, and it looked like she had fallen off of a balcony. And when they investigated this, they found that she had up to 8 times the dose of Ambien in her bloodstream than normal. And the police kind of wrote this off because they couldn't prove that she...
You're being older and the Alzheimer's and be like, oh, but...
Yeah.
Also, wouldn't somebody be in control of that? Like, if she was considered not safe to do her own medications?
Right. So the police are like, well, she must have forgotten and taken more than she was supposed to. And then in her drunken stupor, fallen off the balcony. And they couldn't deem that it was a murder. So they ended up not really moving forward, and it doesn't look like they're going to move forward in Pam's mother's case. But us friends here on the podcast,
you know,
we think, well, I think that she 100% had something to do with that. Whether it was as simple as giving her mom the medicine and hoping she falls to off of a balcony, excuse me, versus
just
enabling
an overdose.
Yeah. So Pam ends up. So this is all like being looked into. While Pam is being looked into about Lewis's murder, they decide to look at Betsy's murder and the death of Pam's mom. And so at this point, Pam enters an Alford plea for the death of Lewis. That means that she says, I'm not guilty, but you have enough evidence to convict me, but I'm not guilty, but I'm going to go ahead and enter this plea, and I'm going to agree to spend life in prison without parole.
Because you did it.
And I'm pretty sure, and that was kind of where my research ended. I know there's a Dateline did an episode on Pam. There's a mini series out where Renee Zellweger plays her called The Thing About Pam.
Oh, wow.
And it's just such a crazy story, honestly. It's just such a crazy story to think about. in general, but I want you guys to hear her 911 call, so let me play that for you really quick.
911, what's your emergency? Hey, hello, there's someone broken in my house. Help me.
What's the address you're at?
Help.
What is it? Is it your voice? Is it your what?
I'm getting in the car, but no.
What is my address?
Get out. Help.
What's the address you're at?
Cut the recording off right there because in the next second, you could hear 5 gunshots ring out in succession. By her own admission to the officers who arrived at the scene just a few minutes after this, she discharged her weapon until she had, quote, no more bullets.
Okay, so that was Pam's 911 call. Now, I want you to listen to Russ's 911 call from when he found Betsy, so trigger warning. If you don't want to hear it, now's the time to just skip ahead like a minute or two, because I want to hear your reaction to the differences between the two, because you just heard Pam in her 911 call when Lewis allegedly attacked her, which we know he didn't. She was just being stupid. And this is Russ's 911 call when Russ found his wife lifeless on the floor.
King County 911, what is the location of your emergency? Okay, ma'am. Hello? Yes, I need you to take a couple deep breaths so I can see what's going on. What is the address where you need this to come?
130
Okay, what is the telephone number you're calling from in case we get disconnected?
I don't know this number. I know my cell phone number.
Okay, what is that number?
It's 304-565.
Okay, who am I speaking with?
My name is Russell Faria.
Russell, what's going on there?
I just got home from a friend's house, and my wife killed herself. She's on the floor.
Okay, Russell, I need you to calm down, honey, okay? I need you to calm down, take a couple deep breaths. We're going to get somebody on the way there, okay? What did she do? Do you know?
She got a knife in her neck and she fed her arms.
Okay, calm down, honey. Is she breathing at all?
No.
She is not breathing?
No,
okay. Russell, is there anybody that we can call for you? Okay, Russell, take a couple deep breaths on, okay? Okay, what is your mom's name?
Okay, I'm going to stop it there. It goes on for a bit longer. And I also want to say, I just wanted to add this as we're, he's talking about, please call my mom. Russ was the kind of guy that every week, once a week, he would have dinner with his mom every single week. And that was one of the things that Betsy loved the most about him, is because she really, you know, saw that he was such a good human being. But I do want to hear your thoughts on those, the differences between those two 911 calls.
I mean, the first one's so fake. It is unbelievably fake. But, like, with Russ, I mean, it's not even barely the beginning of the call. And it's already just so real. I had chills just listening to it. And I'm tearing up a little bit because, I mean, personal, like, I have my own little triggers. And I've lost quite a few people. But I just, you can tell how much anguish she is in. And just can't hardly get anything together just to try to help her. Because it's just, I don't know, it's a stark difference, completely stark difference from her and him.
Yes, I agree. And I also want to say, who knows, in the off chance that for some reason Russ has found this podcast and has listened, or his children or family or anyone who knows them, I am so sorry.
Yes.
So sorry that this is what happened to your beautiful wife, mom, friend, human, daughter. That you knew. Yeah, daughter. This is a horrific case. And I am so sorry that not only that happened to her, but that the chaos and the torment and the, I mean, there's no words to describe. This devastated a family, ruined a family. Like, those two daughters lost their mom and had a ridiculous experience with their dad too, you know,
and
like,
for what?
Right.
Why? Like, what motivated, if you're alive, Pam?
She's alive.
You know, what motivated you?
Money.
And it wasn't just, I don't know,
They also think
like
that
three,
it was
you've
more...
You've got, like, three cases of people.
They think that it was more than just money, too. A lot of times...
Because Louis, I mean, he was just...
They were speculating... Yeah, Louis, unfortunately, was, like, collateral damage, and the fact that she wanted to point the finger back at Russ because he had been acquitted, but... or found not guilty, rather. That's very different. But, yeah, it's just... You know, they said maybe it was... The motive was money, but a lot of people said that Pam has a very jealous side to her as well, so... Whatever it was, you know, the fact of the matter remains that we lost a beautiful person that day. And
she ruined more than one life.
Definitely more than one. But we lost Betsy and we lost Lewis and probably her mom as well. But nobody can prove that. Of course, that's alleged. So
after what else she's been capable of, there's no clue or no doubt, in my mind that... And that she wouldn't do something
that
else.
It's definitely a possibility. Should have been looked into.
A case, obviously, in rehabilitation, never being something that can correct that.
Pam probably could never be rehabilitated, unfortunately for the world. But it's kind of a sad ending. But I did want you guys to hear the differences. Like, I can't imagine... I don't know. Just the way that Pam was and the way she speaks. If you go watch any of her interrogation, like... Those cops treated her so nice and so respectfully, like, I don't know. And the way they treated Russ was just so different. And so, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a police officer, so I can't speak to the training or what I would do in the job. I really shouldn't. But I just feel like there was some bias there. And, you know, it led to some errors. And there also ended up being some misconduct. So from Russ's original trial, the prosecutor ended up being voted out of office, and the judge that was part of that trial, ended up being held on misconduct in a separate case. So it is probably the justice system as well being a problem.
Which often is.
Yeah, of course.
It's crazy that the people that need to be punished... get away with it, and then a lot of times there are so many falsely imprisoned people. It's not fair.
It's not fair. But thank you so much for listening.
Yes.
Of course, we'll have another episode next week, and if you have any cases you want... Oh, duh! Oh my god, I was supposed to start it out by saying this. Shout out to Mary, because Mary was our first listener request, and it was for the case of Pam Hupp. So
oh, cool.
Mary requested this case. Shout out to you, Mary. Thanks for letting me know about it, and I hope we did it justice for you. I was supposed to say that first. Whoopsie-daisies. But if you made it this far, shout out Mary. And then if you guys want to suggest anything to us, you have our email. It's those spooky bitches, except for the one, I mean the eyes of one, @gmail.com. One day I'll know our email address. It's just not gonna be today. Or you can find us on Instagram, TikTok, and at those spooky bitches. You can message us there as well. So I am interested to see what you guys think about all of this, interested to see what you guys suggest moving forward. What else you got?
I don't know. I I really should write down also our things that we need to mention. Because I can never remember them either. But, and let's see. So, I will say this, if I can get this open right quick.
This is my time to just distract with the soothing sounds of my voice as she looks upon her phone. I am stalling. Okay. Oh, did we find it?
So, we've done Unsolved. We will do more Unsolved. We will do more female killers. Next week's is Cannibal.
Oh my god, I'm so excited.
So I just wanted to look and see what next week's schedule was. And yes, it's on cannibals.
Cannibals.
I'm excited.
I can't even wait.
I think, I can't even remember. I think, did I suggest cannibals and you suggested like the decapitations?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I don't know at this
point.
But we
have so many interesting things listed. Yes.
I can't wait to wait to do Cannibals.
Our next one.
I like vividly remember watching like some interview with some serial killer where he was talking about microwaving a cat and then eating the brains of his dead victim. Anyway, I have so many things.
I can't say anything because like my grandmother introduced me to horror really, really, really early, and Silence of the Lambs was like one of my very first things.
Yeah, of course.
So I do love Hannibal Lecter.
Yes.
But aside from that, that's something for you guys to look forward to. I apologize again today. Apparently my voice and my brain hadn't worked.
Quit apologizing. Stop apologizing. Oh, anyway. I'm going to make it a song. Don't, every time you apologize, I'm going to play it. Don't make these people have to hear
like
me
sing. My own personal bard in a campaign. All right, guys. Well, we hope that you have a great rest of your weekend.
Yes.
I get to wrap up my birthday weekend.
Yeah, happy birthday. Happy birthday.
You should, like, totally. Your voice is so pretty.
Stop. It's really not. Okay. Y'all have a wonderful weekend, like she said. And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.